Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, April 18th, 2022. To begin with, as you just heard, this meeting is being recorded and we will have the meeting audio on our website afterwards. Just to share a few helpful tips for people joining via phone calls, you can press star six to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star nine. Everyone joining via video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. If you go under reactions, you can click on the raise hand icon to raise or lower your virtual hands. Raising hands indicates that somebody is intending to speak, and it also helps us having one speaker at a time. So thank you for speaking one member at a time. As you probably remember, we do have ASL interpreters on this meeting with us therefore, I would request everyone who speaks, please state your name first. It helps them doing their job well done. It also helps everyone on the phone call knowing who the speaker is at that time. Chair Semaphore, I can go ahead and read the agenda and then take the roll call of the committee members.
Yes, please. Go ahead and do both.
All right, thank you. So I would also share my screen so that everyone who is able to see can also look at the agenda while I read that out loud. Give me one quick second. And I'm hoping my screen is visible at this point. Okay, so we will take the roll call after I finish reading this agenda. Afterwards, we will have the review of agenda for today's meeting and last month's meeting minutes would be approved. At 4:10, we will have customer service and commendations report. At 4:15, we will have the Michael Wilson Award. Okay, I apologize, this sharing screen is not working very well, so I would stop sharing. All right, going back to reading the agenda, at 4:10, we will have the Michael Wilson Award and the AAC Metro Access Safety Award. Just as a reminder, the Rush Awards have been deferred to the time when we actually go back to the in-person meetings. At 4:25, we will have a Metro Access face mask policy update. At 4:45, Metro Access share ride update would be provided by Mr. Blake. At 4:55, Metro Access flatware update will also be provided by Mr. Blake. At 5:10, we would have an update on revival of focus groups, virtual or telephone, of Metro Access customers' knowledge and satisfaction of service by Vermata's research department. This would be a committee discussion with Mr. Blake, Allison Anderson, and Terian Williams-Hall. At 5:30, we will take any public comments and the meeting would adjourn at 6 p.m. That concludes the meeting agenda for today. At this point, I would go ahead and take the roll call of all the AAC members, so please confirm your presence. Darnese Bush. Tina Calabia. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy.
Present, yes.
Thank you. Debbie Fisher.
Present.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein. Melanie Henderson is out on medical leave. Steve Caffin is on vacation traveling. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazzell.
Present.
Thank you. Anthony Oberg is also out on medical leave. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush?
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semaford?
Present.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan? And Kelly Simona? All right. Thank you.
This is Tino. I was muted when you called my name. Sorry. I'm present.
Thank you. I did mark you present. Thank you, Tina. so that concludes the roster for today's meeting. At this point, excuse me, Chair Summerford, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Thank you so much. Good evening, everybody, or afternoon. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to review the agenda and then the minutes from the prior meeting. So with this agenda today, there were amendments. Is there any other amendments to this very full agenda? Because I've talked to most parties. Everything could be satisfied on here. Let me do know now. Hearing the crickets, can I get a motion to move the agenda as is?
So moved.
All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
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 Nays. Abstentions, the motion carries to move the agenda as is. Minutes from the prior meeting from last month in March at Metro Access Subcommittee meeting. Are there any additions, changes, edits to the minutes, comments? Hearing the crickets. Can I get a motion to accept the minutes from the last Metro Access Subcommittee meeting in the month of March as is? I guess I'll take that. So moved. Any, I guess all those in favor of moving the agenda, accepting the minutes as is from last month, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays. Abstentions. The motion carries to move the March Metro Access Subcommittee minutes as is. So next, this brings us now, Ms. Anderson, the customer service and commendation reports.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Allison Anderson with Metro Access. At this time, I'd like to present Ms. Kay Clark with MTM to give the readout for the public comment from our last session. Kay?
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you, Ms. Anderson. There are no customer comments that need to be resolved from either of last month's meetings, but of course, I'll be highlighting the excellent customer service witnessed and reported by our customers during the month of March. Metro Access received a total of 234 commendations, and the count by company is as follows. First Transit had 40, Transdev had 54, MV also had 54, Challenger 35, Diamond 45, Eligibility 1, and last Abilities Ride had 5. And that concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, next, Ms. Anderson, any Michael Wilson and or AAC Metro Access Safety Award recipients?
Yes, sir, we do. So at this time, I'd like to present Will Ford with First Transit. Will?
Good evening. How's everybody? So unfortunately today, both of the recipients were not available to come. But we did our due diligence this morning and spoke to both of them, presented them with some awards. But I just wanted to give you an overview of both. So our Michael Wilson Award winner is Sherelle Summerfield. She's been with us since 2007. She currently serves as a maintenance clerk. She, you know, wanted everyone to know she was born and raised in the Washington, D.C. area. Went to Coolidge High School. She enjoys spending her free time with her kids, grandchildren, and watching and playing basketball, softball, and bowling. She is reliable, dependable, and a great communicator for us. I consider her to be a valuable member of the team. She consistently achieves good results and delivers all our expectations in the maintenance area. She's our backbone of the maintenance department. So this is long overdue. We just want to tip our hat to her. And I just want to, I tell her thank you again to you guys as well. Moving forward for that, our safety award recipient is Gregory Johnson. Gregory Johnson started with us in 2016. He held the position of a driver, which he had a tremendous safety record. His journey in the paratransit, you know, within those 3 years, he was committed to giving back to the community. He wanted to serve, you know, and the reason why he wanted to serve, he has a younger brother that currently has MS, and he stated that he cared for him since he was 11 years old, you know, so he wanted to ensure that he can provide that same outcome to the public. He's now currently a road supervisor. He's been serving in that role for 2 years now. He has been promoted to our lead team member of the road supervisor. He consistently works. He's the model employee for First Transit currently. So we want to take our hats off to him as well and give him kudos. So thanks to Greg as well. Thank you, Allison.
Thank you, Mr. Ford. And again, if you can express our hearty congratulations to the award recipients this afternoon of both the Michael Wilson Award as well as the AAC Metro Access Safety Award. With that, Mr. Semelfort, I will turn it back to you.
Okay, our first topic, which actually is going to be quite interesting, is the Metro Access face mask policy, especially given today. There was a significant court ruling from a federal court, which has vacated the whole policy. And I would love to hear from Mr. Blake and wonderful Metro Access management, what does that mean to us, especially in light of what just happened today? And just in general, how are we going to move forward with this and what is WMATA's position? And then, you know, educating customers. But I'm going to let Mr. Blake go or any of y'all take crack at this.
Okay, so good afternoon, everyone. Christian Blake, Managing Director of Metro Access Services. We had this on the agenda because we were saying on the 18th, the Biden administration was going to make a decision as to whether or not to extend the mask mandate for airplanes and public transportation. Well, they had actually made the decision prior to today, as many of you I'm sure heard, that the mandate has been extended until May the 3rd. However, as you say, Mr. Chairman, shortly before this meeting began, there was a court decision in Florida ruling that mask mandates on airplanes and public transit were unconstitutional. What does that mean for Metro Access tonight and tomorrow and beyond? Well, right now that means no changes for us because we're anticipating that the Biden administration will appeal the decision. If they appeal the decision, will the court that accepts the appeal have the decision made today stand, meaning it's unconstitutional until an appeal can be heard, or vacated? I'm not a lawyer, so I may have them backwards, but vacated until the appeal decision is actually heard. What we're going to do is wait until we hear more news from the Biden administration as to how it's going to address today's court ruling before we make any changes on Metro Access. So for now, the mask requirement on Metro Access will stand. And once that decision is made, what we will be doing either May 3rd, if that's the day that the mask mandate goes away, or tomorrow, if that's the day the mask mandate goes away because of the court decision and the acquiescence, if you will, of the administration, we will then remove the mandate, but still encourage customers to wear a mask for their own benefit, but it would not be a mandate at that point in time. But as of right now, masks are still required by Metro Access customers.
Oh, I know they're probably hands. I'll be the first to throw questions at you. So, because I know there is a domino effect, it's a moving target right now. We don't know what's going to happen with this decision today, but planning going forward, if, like you said, at some point in time, The mask mandate is removed. My biggest concern is communicating that to customers. What now is going to be possibly a recommendation as quickly as possible, if and when y'all decide to do that based on all these moving targets. And then the next piece is, how's this going to look with particularly, on sedans, like on a van right now, I'm going to let you speak to it, but a sedan where you're so close to that driver, is this going to apply, for both drivers or, how you communicate this to drivers? I can see drivers like, oh, I'm no mask. No, I'm not working. I'm just throwing all those things out there, the feelings and what are you doing on the back end in anticipation of, as this is a moving piece that things might change tomorrow or next week to prepare and brace all parties for this.
Okay, so in terms of communicating with the customers, we do have, as I say, your beloved IVR, but we do have the IVR, we have other forms of messaging, and we would inform the customers that the mask mandate is, that wearing a mask would no longer be mandated, but it would still be encouraged. Once the mask mandate, though, is removed, either by the administration or by a court ruling, then at that point, we're going to declare public transportation on Metro Access is in fact fully back to normal. And so there will be no distinction between the sedans or a van, and we will inform the drivers of that. And it's their job to continue to protect themselves. We're going to encourage customers to protect themselves. Again, ventilation has always been our primary means of protection, and we're going to continue to focus on ventilation. But wearing a mask is a helpful tool as well. So if a driver says he or she doesn't want to drive because the customers are too close to them, and we're going to say, well, if you're concerned, are you practicing the ventilation that we've trained you to? And are you going to wear a mask? If even after all of that, that driver decides he or she doesn't want to drive the vehicle, well, what do you think could happen to me if I called my boss and told him I just don't want to come to work no more? What do you think could happen?
Yeah.
So the bottom line is drivers are there to be professional drivers. Their management teams will be discussing with them as changes occur. But once the mandate is over, then we will declare that public transit, shared ride public transit on Metro Access has returned to its full pre-pandemic service level.
Whenever that's done, I do strongly suggest on top of all the different levels of resources you have is doing an email and or call blast to as many people as possible, since y'all have those capabilities. Also stressing to drivers, clearly communicating that it's now, whenever it happens between now and the next meeting and the AAC meeting, if it does happen, that this is a choice and not, pressuring customers to wear a mask or wear not wear a mask or whatever the case may be, because I could just see all the human feelings playing out and complaints coming in with this, because this is such a personal issue of safety for people.
Well, we'll take note of that. The email one, I'm not quite sure about that, because a lot of customers haven't given us their emails.
Well, and those are on record who have emails, send that out. Of course, you have the option to do call blast out, which I've seen.
Yeah, we could probably do a robocall messaging as well. The only challenge with that, and I'm not saying I'm against it, we'll probably do it. But if you send a robocall to 45,000 people, when generally it's about 10,000 who actively use Metro Access, is that kind of an overdue, if you will? But again, you will see some action on our part to inform the customers of the change rules when they do in fact change for good.
All right. Committee members, as it relates to this topic, are there any hands or new?
Chair Simon Ford, Phil Posner and Vanessa Cole both have their hands up. So Dr. Posner, go ahead, please.
advertise for the legislature in the state of Florida. They're not very smart. But if the seatbelt requirement is constitutional, how can a mask requirement not be constitutional? It's a ridiculous comment by that judge. My suggestion is, since there has been a mandate, there has been a requirement, and a large number of scofflaws around the country, including the DMV, don't bother to follow it. And most agencies have decided not to try to enforce it. So my suggestion is that we continue the mask suggestion. And the fact that they say a mandate is unconstitutional does not mean that suggesting for the safety of yourself, other passengers, and your driver, please wear a mask.
Thank you, Phil. Vanessa, you're next.
Okay, thank you. This is Vanessa. When that time comes that masks are no longer mandatory or optional, I can see that being problematic in the sedans, because already I'm experiencing the windows being down low and being cold in the back. So I've had discussions with the driver and we have to come to a happy medium because it's cold back there when those windows are down. And I can see them rolling windows down even more so if I don't have a mask on. I mean, I'm a mask wearer, but I can see that being problematic.
And that is a good point. And we've asked the drivers, so the drivers have to understand, and we told them that the windows that are down need to be down in accordance with the passenger, the customer's impact in mind as well. And when a customer expresses concerns, they're supposed to adhere to the wishes of the customers. And that's why ventilation is not just the windows, but also the air conditioning unit. But also drivers are or have been trained to utilize the cross window approach, which is the front window on the passenger side and the rear window on the driver's side. And that's supposed to create somewhat of an air current where it's capturing each other so that the impact of that one customer in the rear passenger seat should be greatly reduced while protecting both parties from a sort of wind and air shield between the two parties. So we can go back and continue to talk with the drivers about that. And I know you're not shy in letting us know when you have challenges, but if you have a driver who's not willing to cooperate with you as the paying customer in reference to the level of the window height and its impact on you, we need to know about that.
Yeah, I've had a couple of knockdown dragouts, but I surrendered. You know, I like to make the drivers comfortable, and my ride trip was not that far, so I just surrendered.
Okay, well, we just want to make it, put it on the record. A customer does not have to surrender. You can, or even if you do surrender, you should still inform us so that myself and the management team can follow up with the particular company and its driver and ensure that not only that driver, but all the drivers understand what the directive is when it comes to ventilation and the windows in the vehicles. And by the way, that holds for the vans as well. You're not maybe not as impacted, but we're encouraging windows open on the vans as well. And on a day like this, yeah, that still can produce some cold weather. I mean, we woke up this morning and winter came back and said, I heard you were, thought I was gone or something. Mm-hmm. So on a day like this, it can be impactful. So we just need to know when you communicate the impact of the air and the breeze on you, and the driver does not demonstrate the courteousness that we've instructed them, we do need to know about that.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Is there, help me out, is there anyone else that wants to comment on this specific topic before we move on?
Chair Samford, this is Anu. I do not see anyone else's hands up.
So to wrap this up, we're probably going to speak to it next month because that way we can just get an update on whatever decision may be, and maybe by the next AAC meeting or Metro Access meeting for certain. The last piece, Mr. Breck, I do suggest is our wonderful, you know, staff with reservations and, of course, you know, Where's My Right agents, they have it ingrained about the mask mandate. Obviously, whatever decision is made, if it's removed, you would obviously that some of your, you know, routines and procedures with those groups are going to have to be modified in their scripts. However, y'all wanted to go to a recommendation or just drop it all together discussing a mask. I'll leave that in the most capable hands of your of you and your wonderful call center staff.
Yes, we agree that those scripts, if you will, and just the communication about the mask mandate will be updated among all of the Metro Access ecosystem team members as a decision is made when it's a final and firm decision moving forward, and it's a clear, uncut movement towards the post-pandemic world.
All right. Thank you. So, and also, I think it might be mentioned in that automated when you sit there, when you call one of the, you know, wait and speak to an agent, and that, you know, that woman that speaks about the service and the basics and everything, that might be ingrained in it too. So you may want to check and edit that as needed also. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So with that, we're going to move you to the next topic, is there a question?
Yes. That's a question. This is Thomas.
And this is relating to the face mask policy, right?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, speak.
Yes, my question is this. When y'all do lift the masks and stuff, for those of us that have medical problems and we still want people on the van that have the mask, can we request that when we make our trip schedule?
No, you can't. You cannot request that. You got to keep in mind this is a shared ride, fixed ride equivalent public transit service. So right. once the experts who are charged with advising the nation on this pandemic declare that a mask is no longer mandated for airplanes and public transportation, then it's your role as the customer to continue to be prepared to protect yourself. And that's where you would bring your mask or two masks and protect yourself. Now, when you're on the vehicle and you see a customer who doesn't have a mask on and the driver has not opened the window or doesn't have the AC system on blowing fresh air, now you can certainly request the windows be open partially or fully. You can request that they turn on the air conditioning unit as a way to encourage fresh air to be filtered through the vehicle, but you cannot confront another passenger about his or her decision to wear or not wear a mask once the mandate, well, you shouldn't confront other passengers, period. Let's start there. You don't confront other passengers, but mm-hmm. When the mask mandate is over, Metro will not attempt to enforce a mandate that doesn't exist. We will not try to force someone to wear a mask if he or she chooses not to.
Okay.
Hey, everyone said their piece on this topic. Going once, going twice. All right, next is the share ride update. And keeping in mind that we now have in this area a BA2 variant. I know everything is moving pieces as it is with COVID and as we're moving towards an endemic. So Mr. Blake, I'll let you give an update as to what Shared Rights looking, what is your plans as we move on and as we are following the science here with another subvariant?
Okay, so thank you. For the month of March, our total shared rides percentage of trips was, I thought I had it right in front of me. Hold on one second. Total in March, 5.25%, which means out of all the trips that were provided in the month of March, and I'm gonna just use the word only 5.25% of those trips were a shared ride, which again is extremely low in a fixed ride equivalent shared ride public transportation service. And I would dare say, I could be wrong, but I would dare say it remains one of the lowest in the nation of any of the largest public, paratransit providers in this country. Could be wrong on that, but I doubt it. But at only 5.25%, that's extremely low number of shared rides. So that was for the month of March. And by the way, March next to October was our highest month of ridership for the whole year thus far. So that was a large ridership month for the pandemic ridership period. It was the second largest since we went into the pandemic. And again, shared rides were only 5.25% in March. For last week, that ended just Saturday. So from Sunday, April the 10th through Saturday, April the 16th, the shared rides, there were 23,201 trips. And of those, only 6.26% were shared rides. So slightly higher percentage than we saw for the entire month of March. But again, at only 6.26%, we're still talking about a very small number of trips that actually involve a shared ride between two distinct Metro Access registered customers. Moving forward, as ridership increases, we should expect to see shared rides increase, but the direct trip scheduling strategy that we're using will remain in place at least until the mask mandate is removed. And it may remain in place even after that. We'll update you as to when that strategy will change. But again, as ridership increases, customers should expect more shared rides. But again, please keep in mind right now, at only 6.26 last week and over only 5.25 for a whole month of March, you're still largely in a limousine public transportation service. I know it's not limousine service, but there's very few shared rides on this system. And again, that's probably the lowest, or it's got to be among the lowest in the nation at this point in time.
Thank you. Any questions from committee members about this? Publicly, Mr. Blake, I will, as a writer in New York City, have to say, yes, this is in sharp contrast to their policy. So we appreciate that you are diligently following the science and working with us as we, I guess, transition back to normal, but keeping safety in mind, compared to New York City, where they just did a full about face in July last year with some notice, but little notice. And even with their taxi cab companies, they treat it as regular public transportation. There's something rolling right next to you, and you just wear that mask for right now. Even and it's a private car. So the fact we get direct trips right now on private, abilities ride vehicles or Metro Access vehicles that are not, with our regular providers is, we thank you for your efforts in ensuring our safety as we move forward, given all the constraints that you have, and continue to follow in this path with your strategy as we go month by month.
It's my pleasure, and it's the team's pleasure to serve.
Any other questions from any committee members on this topic here?
Chair Summerford, this is NY. I do not see any hands up.
Okay. All right. Flat fare is going to be next with you, Mr. Blake. And with that, Phil, once Mr. Blake gives his spiel and presentation, I will allow you to give an update as it relates to that piece, as you would like to give from the board based on the board meeting, what was passed. So I think that'd be an appropriate time to segment that in as it relates to flat fare anyway. So Mr. Blake, you go first, and I know I'll let Phil follow next.
Okay. So since I've been talking so much, I'm going to turn this one over to Anu and let her give you an update.
Oh, okay. I thought we just going to hear from the.
No, I'm just joking.
I was about to say.
I wanted to see if she was paying attention.
Only because, you know, we advocated, as you know, I did for a board meeting for Phil at his request, you know, for flat fares, and that your team was exploring pilots and if they were going to be tried, what is that going to look like if it does, if and when it does come to surface. Once y'all decide what, you know, what variables or what's going to take place with that. So I'm going to let you go.
Yeah. So just real quick, unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of updates, but where we are is that, as you all know, we do have flat fares for Metro Access on the weekend. It's a flat fare, regardless of where you're going, how far you're going, and the time you're going. We do not have flat fare on the weekdays yet. July 1st, there is going to be a new flat fare beginning at 9:30 p.m. I will update just in case something changes. I don't think anything's going to change. But beginning July 1st, there's supposed to be a new fixed route flat fare in the evenings beginning at 9:30 p.m. and going until a period of time in the morning, I believe maybe 5 a.m. What that would mean then is Saturday and Sunday, Metro Access has a flat fare of $4. Monday through Friday from 9:30 until 5 a.m., Metro Access will have a flat fare of $4. Yes, your advocacy, as you and both Phil testify, that you would like to see a flat fare somewhere between $0 and $4. I can tell you zero is probably not a sustainable fare, but in my humble opinion, I believe a flat fare of $4 is a sustainable fare. But again, you advise us, but you can always advocate for what you desire. And that goes for members of the community who are not on the AAC as well. Internally, I am discussing with colleagues, but I can tell you the way, because of the budget process, if it didn't get in this year, is there a possibility that we still can be granted a pilot, perhaps, of a all-day 24/7 flat fare? Anything is possible, so I would continue to encourage you to stress your desires and your advice to the board and the public. But right now, all I can assure you that's looking is that we will have a flat fare from 9:30 in the evenings until very early in the mornings, Monday through Friday, while keeping our flat fare all day on Saturday and Sunday.
With that, before Phil begins, I do have a question, and I think Phil's going to segment his way into. So remember when we, Mr. Blake, we had a discussion, I think a committee member brought up, I believe it was Vanessa, about having a $2 fare. Now, I have experienced some $2 fares. Now, if that is the lowest fare, is that going to be the ultimate one? I know you are going to explore that with your team. If you need examples of trips that where I experienced it just recently, a $2 fare, I can let you know. And that's probably because of Prince George's County, the bus coming into play on the trip planner when the trip is booked. But I just wanted to get a sense of where were you on that, because I know there was some discussion about that.
No, you're correct. Where there is a locally operated transit service within our service area, and that happens to be the fastest fixed route equivalent trip, if their base fare is $1, then that would make your Metro Access fare $2. And per the law, that's the highest we can charge, so we follow the law. As a sustainable fare for Metro Access for all trips, $2. I don't necessarily want to express an opinion one way or another, because I want you all to continue to advise and advocate, but, you know, advocate as individuals, advise as the body. However, we don't want to, when you're thinking about public transit, fixed route is free for customers with who are eligible for Metro Access. If you bring the Metro Access fare too low, what is the incentive to use our world-class accessible fixed route system? So again, I don't want to talk about that one way or the other, because I don't want to be discouraging, if you will, but keep in mind, the ADA's intent wasn't to create a separate but equal and very nice service for people with disabilities off to the side. It was to ensure that services like Metro Rail and Metro Bus, to the greatest extent possible, were accessible for all customers, and you should not have to be off to another service. So the more we add carrots over here on Metro Access, the less the impact and therefore the equality that the ADA really stands for becomes incentivized on the fixed route side. So yes, you will pay no more than twice the fastest fixed route equivalent fare, whether it's the Metro service or a locally operated transit service. But in terms of long-term, sustainable, flat fare, you know the number I've been talking about. So I'll just say that. But, yeah. I just remember you wanted to
explore that. That's why I brought up that. Was there a resolution to that? How does that play into all of this?
How it plays is that we have a flat fare, but we will not overcharge anyone whose fastest fixed route equivalent trip happens to be a service with a lower base fare than Metro.
Okay. And with that, Phil, you go ahead, and I'm sure New will monitor and see if there's any other hands after Phil.
Yes. Thank you. Mr. Blake, thank you for all you do. And the only thing I wanted to add is that have come up on the WMATA website from the general manager and discussion with several new members of the board. And that the flat $2 fare that they are piloting right now for the weekends and after 9 in the evening, they are suggesting that for seniors and people with disabilities, that will be a $1 flat fare. So what they are saying is for that particular time period, that seniors and disabilities individuals will have half of the $2 flat fare. And something that has come up with members of the board on their behest, not on mine, that when WMATA had been charging on bus and rail, why the full fare was used rather than the senior disability fare for Metro Access. So I wanted to just remind you that that's something that the GM has said right now. Several board members have said right now. I know the explanation that we have been given in the past and having reviewed the ADA requirement for fares, that if there are some premiums that are being used in certain transit systems, they can't be used to calculate twice the fare for the paratransit system. And the interpretation in the past from the WMATA attorneys has been that those special fares for seniors and people with disabilities were premiums. And so they didn't have to be used as the doubling number, as opposed to the regular doubling number. So I'm just throwing that out there. The discussion that's been going on for a long time. And you know what this committee has advised, because sustainability is number one. Because no matter what the fare is, if the system can't stay in business, it doesn't matter. Right now, a number of the transit systems in the area, including Alexandria, including Montgomery County, including now Prince George's County, as of my last read, are going to zero bus fares. And so when I suggested something between zero and $5, that was because, with tongue in cheek and a smile on my face, zero is something that legally could be done, but probably isn't sustainable. And sustainable traps can be done. The $5 one was because the average fare has been $4.75 for the longest time, for the last 2 years. And so giving you a peak of five was being what we thought was sustainable because that was the average fare. Even though right now our range has been from $2 to $6. So those are all the numbers. And I personally appreciate everything that you're doing right now. And I'm optimistic that the combination of what you're doing, the numbers you're going to generate for Metro Access, the budget issue, what the federal government's going to continue to do, the board's fear of bankruptcy, in spite of the fact that...
Hi, this is the interpreter, Leah. I'm sorry to interrupt. Dr. Posner, are you able to speak up? You sound muffled or like you're covering. I'm just having a hard time hearing you.
I apologize. I'm talking as loudly as I can, but Anu will have it in the minutes. And we can do it. And I think I have given all of the numbers that we have to do. To summarize, for your transportation translation, we are saying that the final flat fare when we
excuse me, you're still well low. It's still this hard to hear you. I'm sorry.
This is Anu. There may be some glitch. I believe that today that is the loudest we can hear Dr. Posner for some reason. However, and I'm not sure Dr. Posner, if you're able to call in through a phone, if that might help. However, for anyone who can see, if you are able to view the live transcript, it might help you in knowing what Dr. Posner is saying. Thank you.
Thank you, Anu. Phil, you want to finish summing up?
I thought I just did.
Okay, thank you. All right, is there any
Can I just respond? Can I just respond real quick? I hear what Dr. Posner is saying. And I totally understand how the AAC, and he as the chair, came up with the language flat fare between zero and $4. I totally understand that. My approach was a little less complicated, if you will. It was just simply twice the bus fare. If a jurisdiction does go to Dr. Posner's point, one of the points he made is that there's some jurisdictions that are looking to go to a $0 fare. And if a jurisdiction does go to a $0 public transit fare as its regular fare, and that $0 bus happens to be the fastest fixed route equivalent time, then your Metro Access trip zero times two is still zero. So we would have to be prepared for that if that does in fact occur. Something I will follow up on, you know, based on the discussion Dr. Posner had, and again, I'm not a lawyer, per se. Well, either you're a lawyer or you're not. You're not. I miss David Schaefer and our legal debates, but I'm not a lawyer. However, my amateur legal interpretation of the ADA has always said the fare, when they're talking about twice the fastest fixed route equivalent fare, has always been based on the regular fare, not a discount or other promotional type of fare to encourage seniors or people with disabilities. So when we would do twice of, we would do it on the basis of the regular fare, because my interpretation of the ADA has always been the comparison between equivalent inequity has always been in accordance to its parallel with the regular. If there's been discussions at WMATA, even while I was here or prior to my arrival, that gives a somewhat different interpretation of what twice the fastest fixed route equivalent fare is, I'm willing to reach out to our counselor's office and ask for that history and ask if there's a different interpretation. And let's see where that discussion leads us. But at the moment, yeah, Metro Access Management is under the guides that the ADA is speaking of twice the fastest regular fare, not twice the fastest of other discounted or promotional fares, even if the category and the target are those individuals who otherwise would be on Metro Access, and i.e., seniors and people with disabilities. But I will follow up with the lawyers and see where are we with that discussion. What was the outcome of any prior discussion with regard to interpreting the ADA in that very fine area of the law?
Are there any other questions as it relates to this topic about flat fares from committee members? All right, no, hearing the crickets. We're going to move on. Go ahead.
Just a quickie for Mr. Blake. He might talk to Ms. Klein and Ms. Proctor Martin on the board, because those were two of the board members that brought up the issue about the senior fares. And Ms. Klein happens to be an attorney. So he might chat with them.
Will do.
As well as WMATA's attorney. So that way he, you know, he hears what I heard from the board.
All right. So this brings us through the last topic before public comment. So now I'm going to date myself as being on this committee for God knows how many years. When before Mr. Blake came on, and I believe the current director, Ms. Anderson does remember, because I remember her at the time, we used to have presentations where WMATA worked with, I remember, with their marketing group and research, and had a contractor kind of coordinate this, where on a quarterly basis, they would poll Metro Access, you know, current Metro Access customers at the time on varying topics like knowledge about the service, understanding different things from eligibility and things like that. And it was presented to us as a committee on a quarterly basis once the, you know, whatever research methods they use to elicit, you know, whatever questions they had as it relates to Metro Access service or eligibility. And we would like to see that happen again, because it did happen. And when they made those presentations to the subcommittee and the AAC, but most of the subcommittee, there were very useful data points. And it's not only for us committee members, but at large, you know, see what grows and glows is going on with Metro Access as it relates to service and eligibility, and what our current customers know by taking samples. In this case, obviously, as I believed in the past, they did phone surveys of customers, one-to-one focus groups. I don't remember if they brought them in or not, but in this case, because of COVID, obviously we could go to reach as many people in different disabilities as possible if it's, you know, we have the ability to bring that back, to do it telephonically or, you know, by Zoom. And, you know, if we can bring this back, this information could be not only useful, it could be useful to quality assurance, just to say, hey, these are things that work with different aspects of the service, and things that are still present. And we have the data coming from the heartbeat from the customers themselves. So I wanted to find out from management, I guess how what made it drop off over time? We no longer got these things. Is it still going on, or if it ceased, can we revive it again? So first, I look at Ms. Anderson because she remembers this happening. This is before Mr. Blake or our current director was in place.
I can definitely attest to Mr. Semaphore that yes, in the past, we did have meeting presentations as it relates to customer service surveys and whatnot that were done by the WMATA customer research group. So I'm not sure why those were discontinued. I'm sure it was not, you know, not wanting to provide the information there, but I would say, and maybe Ms. Williams Hall or Mr. Blake can chime in. I would definitely feel confident in saying that if that's something that the committee would like to have a presentation on, I'm sure that we could probably make that so.
Okay, so let me just add a few clarifications. Thank you, Ms. Anderson.
Yeah, and there may be other elements I don't know about, but I just remember this happening. It was useful information. Right. Let's start it again. And we got the voice of the customer, you know, working with the research and marketing team at WMATA in conjunction.
So just for clarification, the customer satisfaction surveys are continuing. We do a customer satisfaction survey every 3 months. We haven't necessarily brought them to the committee. I don't know. You know, we use it as feedback for our own strategic informational purposes. Let's hear what the customers are saying. Let's use that information to make adjustments where necessary, or increase education where necessary. If we want to talk about it perhaps once a quarter, I think we can give you a summary of what we're told through the surveys. I don't necessarily know if we want to.
Because I remember in the past, there was a research person, I guess, your predecessor brought in that head person, and he made the presentation of what was the questions, the types of questions that were asked of, you know, the customers, and what was gleaned from it. And we would give our piece and input directly. And I said, we had this before. We would love to see this come back. And maybe, you know.
So, and I'm with you, and I don't have a problem with it. I guess when, and just say, yeah, I wasn't in the role I'm in now, but having done the Metro Access subcommittee agendas and all AAC agendas. You know, I remember this coming up, and my impression at the time is that the leadership at the time, the management team, simply wanted to inform the committee of the work of hearing from the customer base in general. And I think they were sharing it. I wasn't sure it was really a situation where they thought it would be something we do on a continuous regular basis. It was just a matter of information. But again, if you would like to get a sense of some of the surveys and on a more regular basis, we can certainly share that and have a discussion on it. But just keep in mind, the committee, the AAC, is our official advisory committee. The survey set, the customer survey results help us inform us from a general ridership experience, which again, you all can provide to us directly yourselves. But having said all that, I don't think our Metro Access Subcommittee agendas are so packed that we can't find time once a quarter to give you some updates on our surveys and what we assess from the results of the surveys.
Okay, because my sense was when it was dropped, I said, was it the pandemic? Was it staffing? Because we got it regularly every quarter for a good number of years, and then it just kind of, it wasn't brought up. To be accurate, it wasn't brought. Now that you say it's still going on, it hasn't been brought back to us as a committee in a good number of years.
Yeah, probably 4 years.
Four years. Oh, okay. So thank you. That's what I need to find out. I was like, I remember this going on. This is before you came along, and maybe start, and then it dropped off. And I remember this was very useful information for us to hear, and then ask for some clarification, because it's, you know, research's department and marketing teams, the people who's already have this set up, and we sometimes maybe give some feedback as, can y'all explore this, or explore, you know, looking at this concept, is this something possibly feasible? And that's why I said, okay, so we would like to, I guess, make a motion, I guess, to request to have that come back. Committee members, what are your thoughts?
Chair Samuelford, this is Zeno. Vanessa Coles has her hand up, and so does Dr. Posner.
All right, I'm going to go with Vanessa first, and then Dr. Posner.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Vanessa, loud and clear.
Yes, okay, thank you. So that I do remember that myself, because I had been contacted to participate. Uh-huh. So I think that's a good idea. But I also, if I can at this point, wanted to add my personal experience I'm currently having customer service wise regarding making reservation trips. I don't know if those employees are still calling from home or where they're calling from, but the connection is very poor. I'm hearing a lot of echoing. I'm hearing a lot of scratchiness. And some of them I do believe are home, because I'm hearing people in their background. Some of them have actually told me that they are going to be going back into the office. So I was just concerned about that, because I've been having some very poor quality when I'm trying to make reservations. And then the other part to that is, when I'm asking for a supervisor, because I'm having whatever particular problem, they're telling me that they have to first text their supervisor, have to wait for the supervisor to respond. And I had an incident on Monday, and I never got, they gave permission, they transferred me to a supervisor, and I timed it. The supervisor never picked up the phone. So I was not able to express my situation to them. And also I noticed in their script, they are starting to ask you that for your home number when they initially, you know, verify. And I have a problem with that, because when I'm in a public place and I have telephone numbers, I don't feel comfortable with that. Usually they repeat everything to you to include your telephone number, and then you just verify that. But that seems like the script is changing somewhat. So those are my concerns.
All right, thank you. So as far as the focus group, you do agree that, because I'm going to bring it up to the table, that we should revive this and it should come back to our subcommittee to have, if feasible, quarterly reports as we had in the past before it kind of hasn't been brought back in the past 4 years. We would like to have that come back. Your second issue right here, I'm going to let management address. Ms. Anderson or so Mr. Blake or...
I would say now if Ms. Ridgeway of the OCC has any information as to what may have happened on your trip. I doubt just in the surface that she does, but if she wants to comment, she can. I would say a couple of things. One, in order for us to be more effective at answering a specific complaint, I know I've said this before, if you share with us the experience, the date and time ahead of the meeting, we probably could have a more definitive answer for you for any concern, mm-hmm. whether it's the OCC or a vehicle. Letting us know now in the meeting, I don't think we can give you an effective answer as to what may have occurred. But also, again, if you're saying you're having challenges with the phone lines, it's easier to send me a text message, an email, or just call me right then or the day of or the next day so we can investigate each individual case so that we can identify if it's a system problem or if it's an individual problem. So we'll be happy to have, and I know Ms. Anderson and Ms. Ridgeway and the MTM team will be happy to follow up with you in terms of the experiences you've just reported, and we'll be absolutely happy to respond. And I also see Terrian wants to respond as well. So we'll give you an answer now in terms of the generalities, unless she knows specifically about your case. But again, in the future, to help us educate our team, but also the public and better inform the public, these type of examples would be great to hear prior to the meeting so that we can allow you to summarize the issue and then we can respond with the information that we've done on our homework. But Ms. Williams-Hall, did you want to chime in on this as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. So first I wanted to say thank you, Ms. Coles, for bringing this to our attention. To Mr. Blake's point, having had the information before the meeting would have allowed us to give you a more meaningful response. But the good news is all of our interactions are recorded. So I will have Allison follow up with you to get the dates and times of any examples that you can recall. Even if you don't remember the exact dates and times, just the time period, and we can find them in the system and listen to them and address them. Assuming that what you said occurred just the way that you described, I do want to address the fact that there should be no background noise when you're calling, even when the agents are working remotely. The understanding is that's their workplace, just like the office. So we're not expected to have a lot of activity going on, interference with the ability to do your job. So if that's the case, we will absolutely address that. If it's with multiple agents, we will address that with all of them, each one of them. Then this whole thing about texting to get a supervisor. As you mentioned, you were eventually attempted to be transferred to a supervisor, although the supervisor, unfortunately, in your case, never picked up the call. But our technology does not require any texting, any prior notification. It works as if the agent were in the office. All they have to do is transfer the call to a supervisor. So I'm not sure if Ms. Ridgeway is on the call, but we will certainly be following up with her tomorrow to find out about that, because you should not experience that. With regard to asking for phone numbers, that is a little different than what I'm accustomed to have happened. We are changing some things in the call centers I've mentioned over the past year or so to improve the customer service experience, certainly not to complicate it. So we will absolutely find out why you're being asked for the phone number as opposed to just confirming it, which is what typically should be happening. The last thing that I wanted to add to this was that we have returned, the agents have returned to the call center. So as of 2 weeks ago, all of the agents now work, 60% of their work week is in the call center and 40% remains remote because that business model seemed to work. If we find that it is not working, we're not beyond making adjustments where needed. Ultimately, our goal is to do what's best for our customers. So thank you so much for sharing these concerns. Allison will follow up with you personally to get the details of your experiences, and then we will follow up with you with our findings and report back to the board at the next meeting with the outcome of this effort.
Thank you. And I will say this to Ms. Allison's defense, that she and I do have a rapport, and I guess I just decided that was another battle I didn't want to fight because I had attempted to talk to a supervisor, but that wasn't the first time that's happened that a reservationist has had to tell me, and this is just my experience, that they had to get in touch with a supervisor. And I asked them, I said, when did this start? When did they start doing this? And they said that they got to see the availability of the supervisor. And once they get permission, they transfer me. So I thought this was a routine. But I will, and I will, because I don't have a problem with talking to Ms. Allison. I just had not, again, it's just a battle. I just had rather not fight because I figured Corona, and you know, you guys have to adjust and people are doing stuff from home. But I guess I should have said something because and I'll talk to Ms. Allison about it.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
But also, I want to just add, though, because this is the second time you said this, Ms. Coles. Now, this is not the Ms. Coles I remember now.
I think I brought up this issue once, but I found out they were at home, how I told y'all that the person could not get me to a supervisor, but that was a long time ago. So when I heard
this, we're going to follow up on that, but I want to just stress to Ms. Coles and to everybody, it's not a battle. Please don't feel you're having to fight anything. Simply reporting to us your experience, it might be our battle, but you certainly don't have to have a battle or mentality that you're fighting a fight. Just your reporting these experiences should be enough. We would appreciate you bringing these to our attention again. Obviously, it's still on your mind. You brought it up. So we don't want you to have to carry that burden with you and be worried about it. So you have to let us know as soon as possible, because again, we can then inform the customers of all of you, but we also can get to the bottom of things much quicker. So what you experience, perhaps we can avoid another customer experience.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So going back to Revival Focus Groups, Phil, I think you had something to say. And Phil, if you can bring a motion to the table, you know where I'm going with this. Please go ahead. You're getting what I'm reading with this. Go ahead, Phil.
I would like to make a motion that we adopt Mr. Semelfort's suggestion.
Yeah, so the motion on the floor is to, we still have, WMATA still does the focus groups with customers. We just would like to now bring a motion to have them come back to the Metro Access subcommittee meeting on a quarterly basis, if that's safe to say, looking at Mr. Blake, to give us a report out like it was done in the same format previously 4 years ago. So I have a motion on the floor. Any discussion? All right, hearing the crickets, all in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays, abstentions.
Aye.
All right, this motion is carried. Thank you. All right, and I saw Barbara Milbell's hand up. Is this
Chair Semelfort?
Is this for public comment or?
Chair Semelfort, this is Anu. Ms. Rush has her hand up, followed by Barbara Milbell.
All right. All right. Go ahead, Ms. Bush.
This is Ms. Rush.
Oh, Ms. Rush, I'm sorry. Ms. Bush.
I want to emphasize that anyone using the Metro Access service or hearing from the public, that we emphasize the day that you have a problem, report it. Report it, not calling Ms. Rush, not calling Mr. Blake unless it's necessary, but reporting it and have it like a complaint, and then it will be investigated, and write down the time and any incident that happened that day, but not doing anything but complaining to or calling me or calling Mr. Blake. It's not on record, we have to have things on record. You have to have some documentation, and it's important.
Thank you.
You want to get things resolved. Thank you.
All right, Miss Anu, who else do we have?
We have Barbara Melville.
All right.
Then we also have public comments, people who are interested in making public comments.
Okay, go, Barbara, we're going to go with you to end this topic here, and then we're going to go into public comment period.
Thanks, Paul. This refers to the complaint that was made about the inability to have the parties on the phone hear each other. This exact same thing happened to me last Wednesday, and I would be happy to speak with whomever you would wish at your convenience. You can give the WMATA staff my contact information.
Oh, I know Ms. Anderson probably has your contact information. We'll reach out to you and or other members of the team there.
Absolutely.
That's it.
Thank you. All right. So a new public comment period.
Okay. Ansel Torres would like to make comments. And before we begin the public comments, Chair Samuelford, I just want to remind everyone that initially we might have 3 minutes. We do have ample time in the meeting today.
Okay.
So you let me know how you would like for us to proceed further, and we can keep the timer on or not.
All right, we're going to start with the 3 minutes, depending on how many people we got. So
okay.
We'll start with it.
Mr. Torres, if you would come off of mute and make your comments.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Thank you very much. Today, I want to, actually, just hearing what Vanessa said, I want to confirm I've had that experience. But I have filed so many complaints with Metro Access on so many different things, and they have been investigated, and the investigation results that you get back is typically quite non-committal, bland, and many times the same thing happens. So you feel sometimes that you complain, but the same thing continues to happen. So hesitancy or unwillingness to file an official complaint is sometimes simply for that reason. I'm not saying Metro Access does not listen to my complaints, and they haven't responded to them, but there are a lot of them where it really goes nowhere. And so you have to pick your battles at this point. The thing that I wanted to talk about, really, I have three things I want to say. The first is, I listened to your conversations, and a lot of it sounds like, it's almost as though the federal government says that you must charge twice the fare. The language says that twice the fare is considered comparable. Which means one times the fare is comparable, and zero fare is also comparable. So the terminology is comparable. What is comparable? It's not the federal government says we must charge you $2. I think that is something that is not stressed oftentimes when we're talking about fares. The chairman of the AAC tends to repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat that when we ask for things, specifically ask for fares, that it must be sustainable, 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 sustainable. That is a word that he emphasizes each time. And what is interesting is that since I assume he's representing the disabled community and not WMATA, why don't I hear him talking about fares that are sustainable for people who are on limited fixed incomes? I don't hear much sustainability being discussed about disabled people who can afford it. It's only one-ended. So is he and is the AAC representing WMATA, or are you representing the disabled community? And if WMATA can find $40 million to increase contracts, but they can't find $5 million to make fares free, you know, it becomes not credible when you talk about sustainability. And advising that I pay twice the fare is not in the interest of me or any paratransit rider. Why should AAC be advocating that we pay twice the fare, or advising that you pay twice the fare, or hinting that you pay twice the fare, when that is not in the interest of people with disabilities? So when things like that occur, it leaves me very puzzled as to who AAC is representing. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Is there a response to that from staff or?
Appreciate comments from
myself.
Oh, you want to go first, Phil?
Can I say up to twice the fare, because that is the law. I'm not recommending twice the fare. The AAC has never recommended twice the fare. They have often recommended that a different multiplier be used, so long as it is sustainable. And I do love that word sustainable, because if the business goes out of business, it's free because you can't go anyplace. And so I am representing myself and the senior and the disability community. And you can't kill the goose that lays the golden eggs. Money does not come out of a cornucopia to WMATA. We suggest places they can go to find money if it is needed. We have done that repeatedly. There have been workshops that have been run by WMATA, by National Transportation, by several groups in the DC area, Greater Washington, as to how to sustain a fare of zero on buses. There was a workshop only 2 weeks ago, and we have pointed that out when we talked to the board. But we also understand WMATA is a public service, and they have to have the money to pay for it.
If WMATA can find $40 million to increase contracts, they can definitely find $5 million to zero out fares. And many cities around the country have found a way to zero out fares. And with Abilities Right, we have the ability to zero out fares. What about if we choose to pay the contractors the same that stretch limo riders get paid, as opposed to more than what stretch limo drivers pay? So don't tell me that there isn't money there. That rings very hollow. I'm sorry. Just do the math and you'll see what I'm talking about.
No, I understand what you're saying and I agree, but it's a business negotiation, just like WMATA negotiates with the unions. WMATA negotiates with the jurisdictions. WMATA does not have a magic wand and snap its fingers and get money. It's not like the federal government.
Well, the jurisdictions are finding ways to pay zero.
Thank you so much.
Right?
Well, so if I could just add a couple of things, and I appreciate.
Go ahead, Mr. Blake, and then we're going to move to the next customer.
Yeah, and I'll be real quick about this. And again, individuals advocate and should continue to advocate. AAC, you advise. I will tell you again, I've been given a great privilege to serve in this role, but part of that privilege comes with the responsibility, fiduciary responsibility to look after the funding that we're granted, put together budgets that are in fact sustainable budgets. But just because you see a budget that reflects the contracts that were awarded, my job is still to ensure that we run a service that is safe and efficient while creating opportunities for people with disabilities to enhance their abilities and not just be subsidized of their disability. And what that means is, yes, if you say somebody can find money that will just make every fare free, if that's the directive that's given to me, believe me, we'll make that happen, but there will be adjustments. And just like you, I think some customers won't make it personal, but some customers enjoy those abilities ride trips. You enjoy those direct trips. Well, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction, because while we say that a jurisdiction is finding money to make public transit free, keep in mind where they're making public transit free is on their locally operated transit services that in some cases provide less service in 1 year than we do in 1 month. So they're not really apples to apples comparisons. Again, I'm not discouraging anybody from advocating what they believe and what they want. I can tell you as a person who has been an advocate, certainly not stepping in the shoes of anyone with disabilities, but as an advocate for equality under the ADA, now at two different public transportation services, my focus, and it will continue to be my focus, is equality, not something above and beyond that's special. So if people using fixed route services, people with or without disabilities using regular fixed route services are going to be riding for free, that will be reflected in Metro Access because that is equivalent. But having a very clear-cut ADA, that's a brilliant piece of legislation that has been refined even better over years, that clearly states up to what you can do. And having that law there makes things pretty simple, makes things pretty easy. And it says up to twice the fastest fixed route equivalent fare. It makes life easy for everybody because we know what the fare is going to be. And where I can, we're already done over 100,000 so far this year in terms of free trips. I'm going to try to do my best to create opportunities for people to enhance and utilize their abilities to use other services. But when it comes to the safety net, advocate, but I've got to protect the safety net. And that means creating a system that is, in fact, sustainable. So not only Dr. Phil likes sustainability, but so do I. And every time we create programs like Abilities Ride, no matter what variation we make it, all of that is planned for the purpose of sustaining our safety net called Metro Access. Again, advocate for whatever fare you want, but a fare of $0, I'm just giving you my own opinion and just letting you know where the lines will be drawn in terms of internal advocacy versus external advocacy. A fare of $0 is either not sustainable under the service you're currently experiencing, or we will just make the adjustments that you would probably say to yourself, is this worth $0? So I just want you to be aware of the understanding that your advocacy is appreciated and welcome, but there will have to be adjustments made if the flat fare is in fact zero. I just want to keep emphasizing that because I don't want anyone to think Blake has turned their back on him or did a backdoor, or as Mrs. Rush likes to say, the Corleone. I want you to know precisely where I will be coming from talking internally if the conversation is ever a $0 fare. Not so much so at three or four, obviously not at four, but at $0 flat fare, adjustments to your experience on Metro Access and other things, i.e. Abilities Ride, will have to be adjusted. I just have to be honest and frank about that.
Mr. Blake, if it's costing less to provide the free rides, I don't see how what you're saying makes sense. Plus, then I'll just finish with this because I know I've spoken quite enough already. But in the top three cities in the United States, New York, DC, and Chicago, none of them charge twice the fare, okay? And New York City has the largest paratransit system in the country, and they are not charging double at all. They're charging one time the fare, and they have e-share service over there as well. It isn't perfect. No system is, but that's the reality of what's going on. So for me, it's hard to take what you're saying in a credible manner, because other cities are managing to do it and they're not providing less service. So I don't understand that. And Abilities Ride is costing Metro millions of dollars less. So they're saving a substantial amount of money. Metro is not feeling any pain because they're providing disabled people Abilities Ride. They're not feeling any pain at all. So anyway, I'll stop there. Thank you.
And I'll just close on this, and because I know we'll be discussing this more and more. And I appreciate the points Mr. Torres is making. I just got to say it, I always remind, and I know we have visitors who are not from our local area on this call, so I like to put things on the record. Number one, yes, Abilities Ride is a great financial saver. I won't say great, but it saves money. You're absolutely right. But again, I cannot pour all of the Metro money for paratransit into Abilities Ride, because at the end of the day, Metro and myself, and you know how strong-willed I could be, I have absolutely no control over the day-to-day operations of any of those services. If Yellow, and I don't want to call our company because I don't want to pick on anybody, but if any one company, Uber, for example, and I've used this example before, just decides to shut down tomorrow, they just want to take a protest, or the company itself wants to do a reverse protest and just shut down tomorrow, I need a van or a sedan to go pick up all those customers whose trips would have been booked on Uber. That's called the safety net, and that doesn't come for free. You got to have, and it's not even about the money. Well, you'll have the money the next day. Well, it's not about the next day. Safety net is when you absolutely need it. So yes, Abilities Ride can save us money, but I'm not going to put so much money into something we have no control over and is not part of the paratransit safety net in the civil rights recognized in the ADA. Secondly, I always say, there's the old song, it was a Frank Sinatra, I love New York. Hey, we all love New York, but again, New York can and perhaps should and does have a nicer, less than twice the fastest fixed route fare for their paratransit. But New York doesn't have the world-class fixed route, accessible fixed route service that Washington has. This region has invested and continues to invest in its fixed route accessibility. And so that money that they're not charging, well, that's probably because if you were in a wheelchair and you happen to be dropped off at whatever streets, I don't know the streets in New York, good luck trying to get into that station. Same thing in Chicago. So it's, again, it's not an apples to apples comparison. When you have, when New York or Chicago, because those are two cities I'm familiar with, become the fixed route accessible system, the world-class fixed route accessible system that Washington, D.C. has, then we can start talking about paratransit and fares and funding and where they put their money. Right now, we're continuing to enhance the accessibility of this world-class system. And that's where we want, per the law, per the intention of the law, we want you and others who have disabilities to be able to use that system free of any interference from a Metro Access or any other manager that there is. That's where the investment is. That's where the subsidy is. Because if you ride that, you don't have to worry about free. You want that free fare? You've got the free fare on there. So again, I love the comparison of other towns, but until any of those other towns has the accessible system that we have here in DC, comparison between what we charge on paratransit and what they charge because they have to, because their systems are not fully accessible, it's not quite a equal comparison. But again, continue to advocate. We'll work together. We'll see where we go. But in the meantime, as I pointed out last week or 2 weeks ago, the good news is I've tried to find 340,000 free trips for customers from July 1st, 2022 to June 30th, 2023. And if we're able to save money, as Mr. Torres points out, we may have even more free trips than that. But we're going to continue to work on these alternatives and these options. But a zero fare on Metro Access, that's going to be a tough pill to swallow under our current service parameters. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And going back to Anu, any other people for public comment?
Chair Simon Ford, this is Anu. We do not have any other public comments.
Oh, okay. All right. Have heard that.
Ms. Rush just raised her hand.
Go ahead, Ms. Rush.
This is Ms. Rush. Number one, once you're a Colleoni, you're always a Colleoni. But what you are stating is fact. New York, you don't pay a lot for paratransit, but as he stated, you can't get in the subway. You got to stay on that system. And if you're going somewhere that the subway will take you, but the system won't, you're stuck. And in Chicago, the same thing. So when we compare and we say, you know, New York does this, and yes, my cousin lives in Chicago, and she doesn't pay but $3.25 or whatever it is, it's cheaper, but she can't go where we can go. They can't even call to check on their ride until after the 30 minutes are up before their ride. So if you call before to check on your ride, they hang up that, no, it's not time for you to be picked up. Call when 30 minutes are up. They have different rules and regulations that we don't have. I think that the fare should be lowered because it jumped from $3 and then to $7, then to $6.50. But we, as a whole, when you call or you visit all the different places, D.C. doesn't have as strict of a rule that the others have. They stop working at 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock. They're not open 24 hours. And we need to invest our time in finding out where those cities with the low fares are getting their funding from. Ours is different. They're all different. And we know where we're getting our funding from, so we really need to be talking to our representatives, our councilmen, people who represent getting money for transportation. WMATA doesn't control that. We have to get our funding from PG, from Montgomery County, from Virginia, from Washington, D.C., and we need to be hounding them. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
I will add, for New York, the reason they're able to go almost 2 miles beyond the borders of the five borough New York City into Westchester County and Nassau County at their borders is because they got, you know, the political clout, and as Ms. Rush said, they got private and other back funding to, you know, to do all those things. It's you know, you have to talk to the local politicians, you got to talk to, you know, other local jurisdictions and governments. They contribute, which adds to keeping that at its single fare. And in that case, is there anyone else that needs to comment during this time, or do we want to consider adjournment, or is there any other burning issue from committee members?
Chair Samford, if I may just make my announcement.
Oh, yeah, make your announcement, your usual announcement.
Anybody looking to make public comments via email or phone calls, you can call us at 202-962-1100, leave a message, and we will promptly contact you regarding your concern and bring it to the committee as well. If you would like to make send your comments through email, you can write at metroaacchair@wmata.com. That's metroaacchair@wmata.com. Thank you.
And did you also want to make your last plea? Since this is the last meeting of the month before the AAC is, for anyone who wants to do the thing in early May in front of the WMATA building, go ahead.
Thank you. Yes. So we, first of all, to begin with, May 3rd is the day when we are doing the test for the fare boxes. And that is May 3rd. It's a Tuesday, the day after the AAC meeting. That's going to be done, I believe, starting at 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Sorry if I'm stating the times incorrectly.
I think you say 11 to 1.
What's that? 11. Yeah. Okay, thank you. And that's going to be in front of the JGB building located at 600 Fifth Street, Northwest DC. I do want to thank all the members who have given their names. The team was looking for at least 6 members, and thank you, we have 6 members, but that does not mean that you cannot come and test. If you still want to come and test, please send me an email. Let me know what that you would be coming so that we can inform the team accordingly. If I may just take another moment and remind everyone about the WayMap pilot. 3 of the members have already confirmed, and anyone else would like to participate in the pilot, please let me know. That is going to start next Monday, which is April 25th. It's going to be on weekdays. Timings are from 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. It does take approximately 2.5 hours for one participant because WayMap team does want to go over in detail. They do need time to calibrate the steps of the individual. So please be prepared if you're coming to have 2.5 hours on hand. I had sent an email with the dates because the days are going to be alternating between Braddock Road and Silver Spring Station. So please let me know if you would like to participate. And the dates again are from April 25th through May 6th, weekdays only. Thank you.
Thank you. And seeing, hearing from the crickets, can I, unless there's any burning issue from AAC members opens or something else like that, I'd like to make a motion for adjournment.
Alexa, what time is it?
It's 5:45. Crickets. Motion for adjournment. So moved. All in favor of adjournment, please do so by saying aye.
Aye. All right.
We're adjourned.
Aye.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.